Welcome, Pewter Report readers and listeners, to another edition of the Pewter Nation podcast. This is a post-game edition of the Pewter Nation podcast.
It is. We had live football last night.
Which is the first of 2018.
Yes.
So, this is kind of a celebratory occasion, not just because the Bucks won, but because actual football is back, right?
It couldn't get here fast enough, right? I mean, we've watched so much underwear football dating back to the OTAs in April and May.
Did we ever?
Yeah.
I am Trevor Sycamore. The other voice is Mr. Scott Reynolds, but you guys already knew that if you were longtime listeners of the Pewter Nation podcast. Scott, first game, first preseason game in the books, and the saying that I learned a couple of years ago that I love is, hey, preseason games don't count, but they do matter.
Yeah.
And we saw that last year when we kind of saw the Bucks struggle to get some sort of pass rush.
Yep.
We saw it a little bit with the play calling in the red zone. And
the lack of a running game, too.
Yeah, and that kind of carried over into the regular season in 2017. They get a win down in Miami, 26-24. We figured out how they're kind of going to play their quarterbacks for most of the preseason, I think. What did you think? Did you have like an overarching takeaway? Maybe one that really stood out to you, something like that?
Well, I think one thing that was really obvious is that Dirk Cutter does watch News Channel 8, and he did see my appearance with Annie Sabo and Dan Lucas
that
last
had to be
Sunday
it.
Night.
Had to be. It couldn't have been anything else.
Well, I said if Dirk was smart, he would play Ryan Fitzpatrick for the entire first quarter, not just a series, but the entire first quarter.
Did he get two series? I think.
I think
two series is what he got.
Jameis Winston, play him the second quarter, and then give Ryan Griffin the entire second half. And lo and behold, Trevor, it's exactly what happened.
There you go.
Now, the one thing
maybe you were calling offensive plays last night, not Todd Monken.
The one thing that was interesting was I didn't say it. I didn't come out and say, hey, the preseason would be a good opportunity to give Todd Monken some play-calling opportunities. But Dirk Cutter is such a good head coach and such a telepath that he read my mind and decided to do that anyway.
Okay, let's talk about that. Let's open up with that point. So, Stroud reported right before the game that it was going to be Todd Monken who was calling the plays for that preseason game, and I believe the entire preseason. Did he say that? I think that's going to be the plan.
Well, certainly he deserves the opportunity to after last night's game.
And to be honest, I looked at that tweet and I read that tweet, and I'm like, because here's why. Not that it's anything against Todd Monken. I think Todd Monken could actually be a really good play caller.
Right.
But when you go into that move with the thought that, and this is Cutter's thought, well, Cutter's still going to call plays during the regular season anyways.
That's the plan as of right now.
It's not like Cutter's this proven play caller as of late, right? I mean, that was a big criticism as of last year.
Yeah.
So if Todd Monken moves into more of a walk-around kind of offense coordinator role, doesn't have to worry too much about the wide receivers that he was coaching in 2017, gets to more focus on being the best offense coordinator he could be. If he's calling plays, let's say he does well because he's one for one, right? They won the game.
Yep.
They had a really well-orchestrated final drive especially.
Yeah, 399 yards of total offense.
I mean,
touchdowns in the red zone.
Kind of speaks for itself, right? And so we would consider him one for one in that game. If he goes 3 for 4, good games called, 4 for 4, good games called, why are you going back to Cutter?
Well, that's a question Dirk's going to have to look in the mirror and answer,
what I'm saying? And if you're not going back to Cutter, and this is what I said right before the game on Twitter, he's an offensive head coach. And you and I talked about this a little bit. I don't think we've talked about it on a podcast, but we did talk about it over the course of 2017, especially when the play calling was kind of up in the air. If Monken takes over, and a reason why I thought that Monken would not take over play calling is because if you're a head coach, you're an offensive head coach, and you cut your legs out from underneath you and you say, okay, the offensive coordinator is going to call plays, how valuable are you as a head coach?
Because that's your identity,
right?
That's your identity.
Right?
Yes, but I will say this, and I speak my mind on PewterReport.com.
You do.
I mean, you do. I have backed Jameis Winston through his troubles here.
Mm-hmm.
I have said that Dirk Cutter is on the hot seat in 2018. And my reasoning for saying Cutter was on the hot seat is going back to the two previous head coaches, Lovie Smith, his predecessor, and Greg Schiano before him. The Glaziers have a quick trigger finger.
Not in the season, but after the
after
season,
after the season,
yes.
They do,
yes.
Right? And those two guys had back-to-back losing seasons.
Yep.
Matter of fact, the only head coach that they have hired that they have tolerated back-to-back losing seasons was John Gruden, and that was in 2003 and 2004. Mm-hmm. The year after the Super Bowl, they went 7-9 and underachieved. That was when the confetti was still raining down in the Bucs locker room.
Sure.
Months later.
Right.
And then they had a lot of injuries in 2004. And then they had a bounce back year in 2005, winning the NFC South Division.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were 11-5 that year, or maybe 10-6. So, but that was just right after Gruden winning his Super Bowl.
Right.
So
right.
He's going to have a longer leash. But Shiano, back-to-back losing years, he's gone. And you had, even after Raheem Morris went 10-6 in 2010, he got one more year.
Right.
And then he was gone.
He didn't even need back to back.
Right.
They just got rid of him.
Exactly. So he had two bad years out of three. And that's really what could happen with Dirk Koetter is he made the playoff, or didn't make the playoffs, but he had a winning season, almost made the playoffs in his first year, 2017. And then last year, you know, or I should say 2016. Then 2017, last year, you know, high expectations, crumbled down to earth, 5-11 record. You know, a lot of stuff happened. We're not going to relive the past. But I don't think he can afford that again. So Dirk Koetter is in survival mode.
Right.
You know, out of self-preservation reasons, over ego, he could say, hey, if this is working with Todd Monken, I'm going to keep it. Just like I've been asked on 620 by several hosts, and probably you too, what happens if Ryan Fitzpatrick goes 2-1 or 3-0 as the starter?
Right.
Guess what? Jameis Winston's still on the bench for that Chicago Bears game in Week 4.
You think?
I do.
All right. No, I just kind of...
You don't rock the boat in the NFL. You stick with what's working.
See, I agree because it is so hard to win in this league.
Yeah.
And when you have a formula that's going well,
mm-hmm.
you don't want to go away from it. You've
right.
seen teams do this kind of with quarterbacks and even other starters in the past. But, you know, somebody asked me when I tweeted this out last night, they're like, hey, aren't there other head coaches in the league that don't call plays that are head coaches? Can't you still have value as a head coach?
Sure. Mike Tomlin, for example, in Pittsburgh.
Right. But Mike Tomlin, much more of a defensive head coach. Defensive head coaches almost always have their offensive coordinators calling the plays.
Right. Ron Rivera,
but
Carolina, for example.
But it is not often that an offensive head coach is not the one calling the plays. That
Sean
just
Payton
doesn't
in New Orleans.
Happen
exactly.
very often. Sean McVay in L.A.
Yep.
Andy Reid. Right.
Yep.
All of them. If you are an offensive head coach.
John Gruden in Oakland.
You know? That is back. That is back. You call the plays. That's just what you do. Why? Because that's your value. You're there to revitalize the offense. Mm-hmm. That's what your goal is. And so, look, man, if Jameis Winston comes back, and we've heard, you know, little hints that his throwing motion's never been better, the ball's coming off his hand great.
Looked good last night.
Sure, he did, yeah. If he comes back and Dirk Koetter, let's just say that Todd Monken is still calling plays, but Jameis Winston comes back, and he looks like the Jameis Winston from his Heisman year at Florida State.
Right.
Like this, he looks like
bonafide
the guy they drafted.
First overall pick.
Correct.
Yeah.
Then I could see Jason Light toying with his head and being like, you know, he improved the franchise quarterback.
Right.
We did well in offense. He had the mental fortitude to give up play calling for the better of the team. At that point, sure, I could see that he stays.
Yeah.
But when you make a move like this, all I'm saying is the margin for error gets a lot lower because the value you're bringing to the team then seems less when it comes to the 1-1 of what you do and how it affects the results on the field. Because even if you go 8-8, are you cool with that? If Monken's the one calling the plays,
yeah, that's tough.
You know,
right.
At that point, it's like, you know, if Koetter was calling the plays and he was 8-8 and the offense was getting better, that's different.
Yeah, I can see that.
You
point.
Know,
and I think too, if you look at Dirk Koetter. He came from Atlanta where he was a playoff caliber offensive coordinator, helped guide the Falcons to the playoffs, helped develop Matt Ryan. I'm not going to give him all the credit for Matt Ryan's development.
Matt Ryan talent. You know,
but he took Matt Ryan's play to another level.
Yeah,
so he had that on his resume coming to Tampa. What we haven't seen him do here, though, is take Jameis Winston to the next level yet. We haven't seen him balance the game management duties and the offensive play calling duties at a playoff level yet. And I don't know if he's going to get there. And I don't know if he's going to be a playoff caliber head coach and coordinator at the same time. And maybe Koetter is realizing that after 2 years, this is a lot harder to make those in-game decisions and have the pressure and the stress. Because I'll tell you what, just watching Dirk Cutter live on television last night, and Mark Cook was there reporting for PewterReport.com, a news channel 8, did the Bucks bonus postgame show. You and I were watching it on television here in Tampa, just watching Dirk Cutter without that play sheet in his hand.
Right, it was different.
He seemed more relaxed.
Yeah, he did. He
more
did.
Focused,
he
more
did.
Comfortable. Like, he was watching the game rather than thinking the next play ahead.
Yes.
And that's got a lot of value because a lot of stuff, when you're trying to make corrections, you have to watch the game, not be thinking a play ahead.
Mm-hmm.
You have to watch what's going on right there and then. And I think that one of our biggest criticisms of Cutter has been the lack of adjustments. And we'll have to see, you know, if that indeed continues. And that's really up to Monken if he continues to show well with a diverse play calling and keeps this offense humming in the red zone.
Yeah, and again, you know, when I even bring up this debate and what I said on Twitter, I wasn't saying that there was no way that this could be a good thing. Someone just asked me about it, and they're like, what's the harm in giving Monken play calling? And
right.
My answer to that, and my answer here is potentially
a
lot
for
Cutter.
Because it's identity. It's
right,
his identity.
Right, but not to say that a move like this wouldn't be good. I mean, it might. You just kind of highlight
and you know what?
If
it does, you know who gets the credit? Dirk Cutter.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's true.
And
it's
if it
true.
Doesn't, guess it's who true. Becomes the play caller again? Dirk Cutter.
Sure. So, I mean, it's kind of a drastic move, but
it's the preseason. It's the time to do this kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, if you're going to do it,
yes.
If you're going to do it, sure, I guess so. Let's stay with the offense, and let's talk about the running game. Peyton Barber came in, looked pretty confident, obviously got the short yard touchdown, which was good to see.
He's
but
hungry, man. He's decisive.
He is.
He's a north-south runner who just kind of powers through tackles.
Also,
I like his running
Greg
style.
Greg Allman posted, I think it was a video, or maybe it was a picture, I can't remember, of Peyton Barber in the locker room last night, and the dude's traps are like mountains.
They're insane, yeah.
I just don't I don't even understand how you get trap muscles that look like that. I don't.
We don't possess them, Trevor. You and I. We don't.
You're damn right I don't. But Peyton Barber did fine. I think he was a nice highlight.
Yep.
Let's talk about Ronald Jones. Because Ronald Jones ended his night 8 yards rushing. No, 9 yards rushing
on
eight carries with a touchdown.
Yeah.
His first NFL play, he comes in.
On third down.
This is with the first team. Mm-hmm. They put him in on third down, which, again, you talked preseason. This is when you do it. This is good. This is a good move to have him do this, especially for his very first play.
Right. Find out what guys can do and what they can't do.
Yep, especially naturally. Because when it is your first play in the NFL, you are so nervous, the only thing that you can do is play naturally.
That's right.
Because you're overthinking everything. You're probably so nervous. You got butterflies, everything. Rojo comes out of the backfield from a shotgun formation, goes out into the flat. Ryan Fitzpatrick fires in the ball, and what happens? Goes straight off his chest. Like, this ball was not – he was not even close to catching this ball.
No.
It was like a baseball hitter being so far out in front of a curveball or a changeup. You know,
it was between the 2 and the 7, though. That's the problem.
And
you know?
You literally heard the ball smack him right in the chest, and he missed it.
Yeah.
And so
this wasn't the first drop we've seen, Trevor. We've talked about it before in the podcast. We've written about it on PewterReport.com.
He
doesn't have good hands.
I don't want to be too hard on him because, as I've written before, you know, people have asked me, should I be worried about Rojo? Should we be worried about Ronald Jones? Look, he is and this is a reality because football players are human beings. People forget this a lot. He is a 20-year-old, actually just turned 21.
Yeah.
He is a 21-year-old kid he's from Texas, but who is living on the West Coast all the way. Now he lives all the way across the country with new friends, a new life, a new job. Everything just kind of upended from him. And he's trying to acclimate for life, not just football.
But so is Saquon Barkley. So is John Kelly. So are some of the guys you were talking about before this podcast.
It doesn't make it easier that we, on the same night that we watch Rojo struggle and be timid, that Saquon Barkley lights it up. And people can go, oh, of course, he was the first running back taken.
Mm-hmm.
But Darius Geist lit it up.
Mm-hmm.
And John Kelly lit it up.
These were guys drafted after Rojo.
These guys went into their first NFL game starving to be NFL players.
Yeah.
And if you ask me, Ronald Jones was not starving to be an NFL player.
He was hesitant. He was tentative a little bit.
Timid, whatever you want to call it. And so, again, I don't want to be this person that presses his panic button because that is way too early.
He's not
to do
a finished
that.
Product, Trevor, but we have a responsibility to report what we see.
But he's got to be better.
He's got to be better.
And you and I talked about this after the game. You brought this up more than I did. You were harsher on it than I did. But at the end of the day, last night was mediocre. Touchdown aside, who That's cares? Right. The hole was wide open. You love the cut. It's fine. Whatever. Sure. But the hole was wide
That's
open.
One play.
Any running back can get in it.
It's one play out of eight that he had.
The Buccaneers didn't draft him in the second top of the second round to be mediocre.
No.
At all.
No.
So he can't be.
They want more than 1 yard per carry out of Ronald Jones. That's a fact.
You know?
And right now, I think that the gap between Peyton Barber and Ronald Jones is a chasm. It's a canyon right now. And I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you said that the word trust. Go back to last year, Trevor. When did you and I and Mark realize that Peyton Barber was the best running back on the Buccaneers? Like mid-season?
Yeah.
And who was still starting?
Doug Martin.
For that Detroit Lions game in December? Doug Martin.
Yep.
Dirk Cutter is the one who made that call.
Yep.
It takes a while to gain Dirk Cutter's trust. And Peyton Barber's got it right now. Peyton Barber is the lead running back. He's the starter for a reason. And if you noticed on that depth chart, Trevor, and we shouldn't make too much out of the Bucs depth chart, but this is worth bringing up.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the number two running back on the running back depth chart?
Was it Rodgers?
Jacquizz Rodgers.
Yeah, I think it was.
Why?
Yeah.
One word, starts with a T.
Trevor.
No.
Trust.
Sounds like rust. Trust. Exactly. Trust. Dirk Cutter trusts Jacquizz Rodgers.
Yeah.
He knows the playbook dating back to his Atlanta days. Okay, who are the last two leading rushers in Tampa Bay? Jacquizz Rodgers 2 years ago, Peyton Barber last year. They like Ronald Jones. They drafted him in the second round for a reason, like you said. Do they trust him? Absolutely not. Does Thursday night's game against the Miami Dolphins, 9 yards and eight carries and a drop pass in your first attempt, earn any trust? No, not really. He's got a lot of work to do. Again, he's not a finished product.
Yeah.
But it's a chasm right now, canyon between Peyton Barber and Ronald Jones.
Before we flip over to the defense, I just want to say that, after a good first game calling plays, I think head coach Dirk Cutter would want to take Todd Monken out for a beer, wouldn't you say?
I would definitely say so.
Now, if he were to do such a thing and he called you up and said, hey, Scott, I'm looking to take
you
Todd
want a recommendation
Monken out for a beer, where should I go?
I'll tell you exactly where to go. Take him to Ford's Garage.
Oh,
they've
okay.
They've got tons Ford's of Garage. Locations right, in right. Tampa Bay. And not only that, they've got some tremendous appetizers. Their barbecue loaded nachos are—it's a feast by itself.
It is. I've ordered it, folks.
Yes.
It is.
And you better have some friends to help you eat it, because if you order that and a burger and a beer, you're going to need some Tums afterwards. I'm just saying. You are.
I don't, but you
that's
know.
That's a lot. Well, you're not there yet. I got 20 some years on you, so trust me.
We'll get there.
Tums becomes a part of your eating experience daily when you reach my age.
Tums is about to be a sponsor of the Peter Nation podcast.
I've got some feelers out to the Tums people and trying to get them to sponsor the 2-point conversion column that I do.
Oh, there you go. There
because
you go.
I'm a Tums user. But here's the one thing. When you take that Tums, wash it down with a great beer, and they've got tons of it at Ford's Garage. Mm-hmm. A lot of local craft beers in addition to all of your standbys and your favorites, Guinness, Corona, Light, et cetera, et cetera. Ford's Garage, plenty of locations in the Tampa Bay area. The newest one around here is St. Petersburg. They've got some in West Chase, Wesley Chapel down the street from my house here. Lakeland is also new, coming to Orlando. Visit FordsGarageUSA.com for menu and locations around you, and enjoy your time at Ford's Garage. And be sure to tell them Peter Report sent you. Tweet out a picture of your meal and tweet it out at Peter Report and Ford's Garage, and we'll be happy to retweet it and like it for you.
All right, defense. Rookies.
Yeah.
Rookies did well.
Yeah, they did.
You know, again, it's kind of that saying.
The big surprise was Jordan Whitehead, though.
But was it that much of a surprise?
It was to me. We saw Carlton Davis coming, right? We saw him coming.
Yeah, of course.
In practice.
We saw MJ Stewart coming.
But Jordan Whitehead, he snuck up on me last night. He really did.
I wrote... I think at least twice in some of the practice recaps, kind of at the end when we were talking about the defense, I was like, hey, man, Jordan Whitehead.
He's had some interceptions.
Listen, if Justin Evans goes down, there's only one safety on the roster that can play that cover three spot.
Right.
It's Jordan Whitehead.
Right.
Nobody else can play with that athleticism. Now,
he's got the range.
Right. Now, when we're talking about when Justin Evans is healthy, then, you know, we'll see Mike Smith obviously likes Chris Conte. Keith Tandy's in there. Jordan Whitehead is playing with the second team with Keith Tandy. But you figure there are going to be guys above him. But when you talk about drafting guys with a certain skill set of talent, a coveted skill set of talent, Jordan Whitehead was one of those dudes.
Yeah.
And really, when he was at Pittsburgh, I think the only reason why he wasn't drafted higher is because he was kind of inexperienced for the position. He played both safety and running back for Pittsburgh, like because the dude was this athletic. They wanted him to get him, make the impact on
and
the ball
as much as he
can.
He's not the biggest guy either. No, he's tough, but he's not the biggest guy.
But, I mean, last night it showed. Yeah. And granted, second and third team, fine, whatever. Yeah. But
I thought he got concussed on his first hit. He came
and
up.
They put him immediately back in.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, he
I don't know
the
how about that
protocol,
concussion
but
protocol.
Exactly. I was like, this is your first game, right? Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'd hate to ruin this night for you. Get back out there, son, you know. Keep having fun. What's your name again? Justin? No, it's actually Jordan, but get out there, Jordan.
Yeah, you get in there, scamp me up.
Yeah, but no, he came in and drilled the running back. I think it was Balazs. And he got up wobbly and did the old like knee buckling thing like you see in boxing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I immediately wrote, he's concussed. And then I said, well, wait a minute. I don't want to tweet that out because it could be wrong. He looks like he might be concussed.
There you go.
And thankfully, I was wrong. But he went out there and continued to have a great night.
Yep.
Had a couple pass breakups himself. Mm-hmm. Played really well in coverage. He looks so good. And I've been hearing behind the scenes that they really have seen this kid come on. You've mentioned it again in those practice reports that I wrote in my 2-point conversion last night down there at the prediction spot that I predict at some point in time this year Whitehead will replace Chris Conte as the starting strong safety.
That would be a fun group back there.
I think it's going to happen.
It would be a fun group.
And I say that because we saw Justin Evans. Now, he was a second-round pick, and you want to get those early picks on the field as soon as possible to justify those selections. I get that. But but they really kind of forced Justin Evans into the starting lineup against, of all people, Tom Brady and the New England Patriots, who he actually picked off in that game. And then they didn't take him out. They said, you're going to give up some touchdowns. You're going to make some interceptions. It's going to be trial by fire, but that's how you're going to get the experience. You're going to accelerate your learning curve. And I think that's going to happen, too, at some point in time. I don't know when. Could be the first quarter of the season. Could be by midseason. I think at some point he supplants Chris Conte as the starting strong safety.
Which is good because, you know, when you—
That's the future.
When you looked at the Buccaneers secondary kind of going into the season— and I can't remember who did this, Pro Football Focus, Bleacher Report, something, but it was basically like the most inexperienced or the secondary that you would trust the least.
Yeah.
And it was the Buccaneers. And, you know, like, I'm looking at that list and I'm like, I can't disagree with you.
Sure, it's a lot of inexperience.
It's Justin Evans, who's in his second year.
Yeah.
Chris Conte, who's proved to be replaceable basically his entire career, although he does still have a starting spot. Brent Grimes, who is somehow playing the way that he is as a 35-year-old. Vernon Hargraves, who is the most burned corner in the NFL over the last 2 years. Ryan Smith, who's probably the second most burned corner in the NFL over the last 2 years. And then three rookies.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like, yeah, not great. So the fact that
it's hard to mount a defense for that argument.
So the fact that the guys they just drafted to fix that are already getting their name in the conversation to remedy that, I think is really, really good.
Yeah.
So,
and you know, you mentioned Hargraves. I think he got hurt last night on a nickel blitz, which was cool. I mean, we saw Mike Smith being aggressive, blitzing, and we've seen Brent Grimes blitz out of there. We've seen Hargraves. We've seen MJ Stewart blitz out of that nickel spot. I think we're going to see more nickel blitzes come this year, and I think that's a welcome sign. Mark Cook said that it did not look like it was a serious injury.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I think that it was just like a little bit of a tweak, and I think that Hargraves will probably play at Tennessee based on this. He might miss practice Saturday, maybe hold him out Monday or Tuesday, but I think they're going to try to get him some more action when they have the joint practices with the Titans. But Ryan Smith, though, right now he is the fifth cornerback on this team. I mean, he's number five because you've got Brent Grimes, you've got Carlton Davis, and Vernon Hargreaves.
Davis has got to start, right?
He does.
I mean,
he's
look,
a starter.
Look, we
that's
have,
why I listed number two. He's a starter.
We have talked all offseason about, you know, who might start where, blah, blah. And, like, you guys have put Carlton Davis in there, and I think it's almost like the Jordan Whitehead thing. You're like, okay, this is going to happen eventually.
Right.
It probably should happen at the beginning.
I think
but you're
Davis
just
is
that.
Happening right now.
But, like, in the back of my head, I'm like, they're not going to start Davis right away. Look, start Davis right away.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a no-brainer.
Yes.
The Dolphins went after Ryan Smith as much as they possibly could last night
and
had success on probably 80% of it.
Yes.
Now, I mean, like, Smith was close in coverage. He made the tackles. It's fine. But when you've got Davis literally playing lockdown and not warranting throws, and even when he warranted a throw, he had, like, a diving pass breakup.
Right. Two pass breakups.
You know, like, this. It's, forget Ryan Smith.
Exactly. If Davis has a weakness, I think, and this reminds me a lot of Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly did this a lot in his career early on, much to the chagrin of a lot of Bucs fans and the coaches. I mean, Brian Kelly, when he was playing opposite Rondé Barber during his rookie season in 98, 99, 2000, in 2001 even, he had three interceptions total in his first 4 years. Then he exploded in 2002, the Bucs Super Bowl year, and had eight interceptions. Why? Because Rondé Barber, the previous year in 2001, had 10 to lead the NFC.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're the other guy, which Brian Kelly has always been,
right,
you're going to get more targets.
Right.
And he finally started picking
off
Hargraves. More passes.
That was Hargraves'
right.
rookie year.
Yes. Now, the thing with
you
Davis,
though.
You
never want to be the other guy at that, corner.
That's
you
right.
never want to be the other
but
guy.
But the thing is, you get to have opportunities to make interceptions.
That's true.
And become the guy.
That's true.
So you're going to have more opportunities. But here's the thing with Carlton Davis, and I saw this at Auburn, and I've seen it here in camp. I can't remember the last time I saw Davis pick off a pass. He is more apt to want to break up passes than he is pick them off.
Yeah.
And at some point in time in his NFL career, hopefully sooner rather than later, he's got to come around and make more plays in the ball, because that's one thing Mike Tomlin said when he came to Tampa to replace Herm Edwards. He said, listen, we don't celebrate pass breakups. Okay, we don't high-five over PBUs because you just screwed up an opportunity for a turnover. Make that understandable right now. Get that through your mind. We don't celebrate PBUs. So that kind of mindset is really what kind of fueled Barber to have a great season in 2001 and Kelly. And I hope that John Hoke and Mike Smith are saying that too. Like, Carlton, hey, great job on those two pass breakups. We want those to become two interceptions. And that's going to be a process because this guy is not a natural ball hawk. He's not a natural interceptor. But the first rule of playing cornerback in the NFL is don't let the other guy catch the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And if he can do that effectively as a rookie, that's successful.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I'm with you there. What about the D-line? What did you think about the defensive line?
I thought JPP flashed. We saw very little of him. And you know what we did see? We saw Gerald McCoy get a sack because of Vinnie Curry. He got one-on-one, and so we're seeing this now. And listen, it's going to be hard to double-team JPP, Gerald McCoy, Vinnie Curry, and then on those rushdowns, Noah Spence. So,
right.
So to me—
Noah had a really nice move last
he did.
Night. Didn't get the sack. He's got to finish it.
Yeah.
But.
Well, technically, he got half a sack. He split half a sack with Patrick O'Connor. That's how they scored it. But
oh, did he get half that sack?
Yeah, it was half a sack for 0 yards. But,
okay.
But I will say this, JPP is going to be a bit of a monster, and I think that Gerald McCoy, who has seen his sack numbers decline in each of the past 3 years, he only had 6 last year, I think Gerald McCoy is going to be the big winner and get the benefit from all this new talent here that I think he's going to have. I think JPP is still going to lead the team in sacks, but I think Gerald's going to have a really, really fine year, and we saw that last night.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, and I think that if – Yeah, I mean, if Noah Spence can deal well with his weight and especially play well on that edge with that entire rest of the defensive line, I think that he is absolutely going to have a place on this team.
Yeah, he's only going to get 20 snaps a game. I mean, he is going to be that designated pass rusher, that third down guy. Listen, a couple of those big Dolphins runs came off his side.
Yeah, that's true.
When he was in the game, you know, as an every down defensive lineman. The Bucs defensive line last night was shorthanded without Vita Vea, who is still recovering from the calf injury. I look for him to play against the Titans next week. And Mitch Unrein's in concussion protocol. That's why we saw guys like Will Golston and Patrick O'Connor, who would normally play outside a defensive end have to play inside a defensive tackle.
Yeah. No, but I mean, if Noah can make the most out of those 20 snaps, then, you know.
He can get 10 sacks.
You know, if that happens, he's going to be a pretty wealthy man. Perhaps wealthy enough to even buy a boat.
Yes.
And if he happens to buy a boat, Scott, where should he go to put all the accessories on that boat?
Yeah, and to get it serviced and to get that trailer, you know, and all that
that's
stuff.
That's what people don't realize.
Exactly. It's not just, oh, great.
I got a boat.
You got a boat.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with it now?
Yeah, right.
How are you going to outfit it?
What is he going to do?
How are you going to get it to the water?
Right.
You got to go to Tia Mahoney's.
Tia Mahoney's. The only place to get all kinds of service, registration. They'll tell you everything that you need to do for that boat. And if you need anything for it, they'll have it there too. It's not just boating stuff, really anything on the water. They'll be able to get you anything that you need. I mean, we live in paradise. I mean, if you don't go to the beach every once in a while or something on the water, you need to change whatever you're doing because you live here for a reason.
I have a pool in my backyard here.
You know?
Granted, I can't fit a boat in there.
You could get a kayak maybe.
But I could get a kayak.
Yeah. And if you needed a kayak,
I would go to Tia Mahoney's.
You know, exactly. So, Tia Mahoney, where are they at, Scott?
They're on Adamo Drive here in Tampa, right off downtown. And you can look them up online as well at tiamahoneyco.com. And tell them that PewterReport.com sent you. They're big fans of the Pewter Nation podcast and big supporters of us.
So there you go. No Spence, if you ever get a boat.
Tia Mahoney.
Tia Mahoney's. Last point I wanted to talk about. Chandler Catanzaro. What do you make of the missed kicks?
I give him a pass.
Give him a total pass.
Okay. You don't want to see the missed field goal, or I should say the missed extra point. It is a field goal, folks. An extra point these days is a field goal. It just is. Okay. The two field goals that he made, the 26 and 27 yard of the game winners, they were shorter than the extra point that he missed. You have to understand that, right? So I treat missed extra points, they're not automatic anymore. If you can find a kicker that can hit 90% or better, and ideally 95% or better. Let's state that. The better kickers are going to hit that mark. That's okay. I'm not expecting perfection. I would have liked to have seen him made his kick, especially his first kick, because I was the one who tweeted last night, oh God, not this crap again, which got plenty of retweets and likes, unfortunately. But yes, in the 53-yarder, that's forgivable, okay? That's forgivable. I would have been really, really, really concerned if he would have missed some of those easier kicks, including the game winner. I liked the fact that he had a pressure kick to win the game in this preseason. I liked the adversity he had to deal with bouncing back. If that miss earlier in the fourth quarter was from, say, 45, 43, 48, I would have been a little bit more concerned. I don't know what the statistical average is for NFL kickers on their attempts from 50 yards or beyond, Trevor, but I think you're getting close to 50-50, right?
Yeah.
Isn't it around there? 60%,
yeah,
maybe 50%
high, yeah, it's
for
a
good
higher
kickers?
Than that, but for the NFL.
So,
especially for guys getting paid as much money as he is.
Yes, and he hit the 53-yarder good. It was straight. It just was about 4 yards to the right, more than it should have been. You know, it wasn't like he shanked it.
Sure.
It was like a hook or a slice, and it went all over creation. But you want him to see him make those kicks, and we'll have to see. I think it's way too early to hit the panic button. We've seen him be a really, really good, accurate, consistent kicker in training camp. And we'll see how he performs this week, not only here, but also in Tennessee for those joint practices in a different environment. So you'll be up there in Tennessee, Trevor, covering the action for us on PewterReport.com and at PewterReport on Twitter.
Yep.
So I think it bears watching, but I am not about to hit the panic button just yet.
I'm not hitting any panic button, but I'm not giving him a pass either. You can't miss extra points. I don't care. You're getting paid a lot of money.
$3 million a year.
Right, and that's, I believe, top 10 kicker money, or at least top 15. And we see kickers that are really damn good go undrafted every single year. And, you know, I know the Bucks just cut Trevor Moore, so, I mean, it's not like he's an option anymore. Catanzaro's the guy going forward. But if you can't conquer the fear and the pressure of a preseason game, then how am I going to depend on you to make a game-winning field goal on the last drive in Lambeau Field in January? So I'm not saying that we hit the panic button at all. I'm not saying that about Catanzaro, because kicking is a head game, and a lot of times it's a momentum thing. And so, you know, he could get on a groove and it could be totally fine. All I'm saying is he didn't get a pass.
Yeah.
You got to make it.
Well,
I don't care.
And also,
you got to make it.
Greg Almond's
53-yarder too. Look, if you get beyond 55 yards, okay, I get it. But honestly, anything before 54 yards, I get this tough kick. I get it. Yeah. You're an NFL player.
That's right.
You're a top 10 paid NFL player.
Yep.
Make the damn kick.
Yep.
That's my thought.
And I'll say this. Greg Allman just tweeted out that Nick Rose, former Washington kicker, is going to be trying out. I think they want to bring another leg in to compete with Canzaro, and it doesn't hurt.
Jason is not going to deal with that crap.
No,
again.
He's not. And
Jason bringing eight kickers.
I don't know. I don't know if it's a Catholic priest or a an Indian shaman,
something,
or a voodoo
priestess. Is one built on an Indian burial ground?
I don't know, but it might be time to like look outside of the NFL realm.
Yeah,
and get someone of a spiritual nature to come do some exorcising of the kicker demons that have taken hold at this Buccaneer franchise.
Are we sure the Saints don't have like voodoo dolls over up in New Orleans?
I don't know.
In a back alley kind of area where it's like all the Bucs players have voodoo dolls and just like poking them?
Yeah, I'm good friends with Martin Gramatica, and I've asked him if he's cursed the Buccaneers before, and he says no, and I want to believe him.
Can he come back and kick?
No, he can't.
Okay.
No, right. He's done.
Okay.
I think all of the kicking Gramaticas are done. Santiago, Bill, and Martin.
All right.
That was a fun little chapter for a while.
All right.
But I'm just saying, Trevor, if this continues, if Contanzaro isn't the guy this year, you really have to look at some form of exercising.
They might be
demons.
Cursed if Contanzaro can't do it.
Yeah, because it's it becomes supernatural at this point.
Yeah, no, that's
how many kickers, right? Connor Barth, Kyle Brinza,
too many.
Patrick Murray, Roberto Aguayo.
Meanwhile, every time Matt
Nick
Bryan
Folk.
Knocks one through the uprights, it's just like a something in the side. So,
yeah.
All right, we'll have to keep an eye on the kicker situation, of course, as you guys will. Next week, I'll be in Tennessee. I'll be in Nashville. I've never been to Nashville. So
it's a fun city.
So this will
Very
be my first
city.
Time. Going to Nashville, the Bucs are going to do their two joint practices with the Tennessee Titans.
I know you're into trap music, but you need to go to a honky tonk. Just get a little experience the honky tonk.
Maybe.
I'm not a honky tonk guy myself.
Maybe
I'm not a huge country music.
I'm
fan.
I'm staying with a good
like
friend
a
of mine,
bit.
So he might show me.
But you got to experience it.
Show him. All right. I am a fan of like experiencing local things.
When
so.
In Rome, do as the Romans do.
Do as the Romans do.
Yeah.
So the practices Wednesday, Thursday. I'll have the live updates of those practices. But I mean, we still have practices at $1 on Saturday, Monday, and then Tuesday, correct?
Yeah, they leave after the practice on Tuesday to head to Nashville. We'll probably have our next podcast Tuesday recapping these three practices, giving you some injury updates, previewing what we might expect to see up there in Tennessee.
And then the game on Saturday. Next
yes.
preseason game is on Saturday. So make sure you guys are following Pewter Report on all the social media channels, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Make sure you're following Bucs Football on Instagram as well.
Yep.
They do a really good job covering it as one of our partners there.
And speaking of partnerships, I believe I'll be on Sunday night with Andy Sabo and Dan Lucas.
Nice, okay.
Doing the Bucs bonus on News Channel 8. So make sure you tune into that as well as our recaps after practice with News Channel 8. Those videos will be posted on PewterReport.com daily. And then, and you'll be up there in Tennessee doing the Bucs bonus stuff with Dan Lucas after the Bucs-Tennessee game, and maybe even before.
I will. That's I'm looking forward to it. That'll be fun. So a lot of stuff coming over the next week, so make sure you guys stay tuned to PewterReport.com. And until next time, we'll see you on another edition of the Pewter Nation Podcast.